This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Covering a diverse array of topics around the Umpqua Valley, and our guest today, we've talked to a number of times before in various roles, Scott Beckstead in here, known for animal welfare advocacy. Thanks for coming in.
Always a pleasure, Kyle. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has. And what do you have going these days?
Well, I've got a lot going on. I spend a lot of my time on animal welfare issues, obviously advocating for animal welfare, but I also am a professor of law at Willamette University and just concluded teaching the first ever course on polar law, which was a fascinating exercise. I learned a lot in the course of teaching that class, but I've got a full roster of classes that I teach at Willamette University, and that takes up a fair amount of my time as well.
Oh, and we're going to ask you about the polar law in just a bit. We'll come back to that. But your big focus really has been on, it seems like, horse welfare advocacy. Why is horses such a passion?
I was born and raised with horses. I have horses sort of hard-baked into my DNA, and I've always felt a very close affinity with them. And what we're seeing right now is so many animal welfare problems around horses and how they're being treated. And I'm talking about, domesticated horses. We see animal welfare problems right now in the Olympics with how some of the horses that are competing in the equestrian events are being treated. And then I spend a great deal of time fighting for our wild horses and burros that live here on our western public lands as well, because they are under an unprecedented assault by the Bureau of Land Management and the livestock industry.
So talk about the Olympics. What are some of the things you've seen or heard about horses there?
Well, there was an incident just before the Olympics started where video emerged of Britain's top equestrian competitor, a woman by the name of Charlotte Dujardin. This video showed her whipping a horse during a lesson 24 times, and that really shined a spotlight on equestrian events and how these horses are treated for the sake of competition. So there's a lot of concern about some of the really harsh training techniques and the really harsh equipment and tack that is used to control the movement of these horses. And I'm a member of the Oregon Racing Commission, which oversees horse racing. I was appointed to that role by the governor, and I serve first and foremost to advocate for the safety and welfare of horses that race in Oregon. So, I'm concerned about, the humane treatment of horses, and of course any cruelty or mistreatment that is that is unnecessary and solely done for the sake of competition, I want to see that addressed.
Are you familiar at all with what the protocols or the rules are for that under the Olympics?
Yes, and what's been distressing in watching the equestrian events is that there are rules that where riders are supposed to be penalized if they engage in certain practices, for example, pulling on the horse's head so tight that basically the breathing is constricted for the horse. So, and the event that is the most concerning is dressage, which is basically choreographed horse dancing, and it uses many riders and trainers use these very harsh bridles that basically pull the horse's head into such an angle that it's unable to breathe, and you're also expecting that horse to do these extremely athletic dance moves, and it just puts horses in a terrible spot. And so, unfortunately, we are still seeing Olympic equestrian judges rewarding that sort of abusive conduct in the show ring.
Has there been much of an outcry on this?
There has been, especially among those that are in the equestrian community who are trying very hard to push that industry to do better and to abandon some of these really harsh techniques.
Now, you mentioned being on the
Oregon Racing Commission.
Racing Commission, yeah. Tell us about that.
Well, I was appointed last year by Governor Tina Kotek to serve on the Oregon Racing Commission. It's been a very troubled commission for quite some time. And I know that, you know, Governor Kotek and I go way back, you know, during my years working for the Humane Society, working in the state legislature. And I did a lot of work with Governor Kotek when she was the Speaker of the House and a state rep. And so she appointed me to this role. I think that that reflects her desire to make sure that someone is on the commission looking out for the horses. And so I have been working with the rest of the commissioners on adopting rules and protocols to protect the safety of the horses that are racing, as well as the jockeys, but also taking positions that advocate for the humane treatment of those animals when they are done racing, so that you know, they're not, you know, landing in the wrong hands, that they're actually, you know, being sent to second careers, or, you know, places where they can, you know, continue their athleticism, or even just be a nice companion for someone. And I get that because the greatest horse I've ever known, the horse that that was with me for much of my adult life, was an off-track thoroughbred, a retired racer, and he was absolutely fantastic. So he's a lot of the inspiration for the work I do on that commission.
How much horse racing is actually going on in Oregon these days?
Well, we've got a full-size track down in Josephine County in Grants Pass Downs, and I actually went down last month and watched a day of racing, met a lot of the people sort of behind the scenes, observed the process of testing horses to make sure that they weren't receiving banned substances or same-day racing medications to enhance their performance. But we also have these fair meets, Prineville, Tillamook, out in Grant County, that happen, you know, they coincide with the county fairs, and they have pretty robust racing schedules during those times as well.
And did you ever think being on the State Racing Commission was a role you'd end up with?
I really didn't. I've been a long time, you know, outspoken critic of some of the practices in horse racing, as well as how, you know, retired racers sometimes are treated. And I never really thought I would be in the role of being an actual policymaker, but I really appreciate being able to serve in this capacity.
So talk about the issues regarding Bureau of Land Management and the boroughs. Where are we at on that?
Well, the Bureau of Land Management over the past 3 years has been on an aggressive campaign to round up by helicopter and remove tens of thousands of wild horses and burros from their designated habitats across the American West. The most challenging part of this problem is that the BLM spreads some very bad and misleading disinformation to justify these roundups. They claim that wild horses are overpopulated and damaging the range. But just, you know, to put it in comparison, there are roughly 50,000 wild horses and burros spread out across something like 29 million acres across the West. And that compares to roughly 1.5 million cattle and sheep. And yet the BLM blames horses and burros for overgrazing when its own data shows that all of that overgrazing and harm is being caused by cattle and sheep. But, you know, they point to overgrazing and say, well, we need to get rid of more cattle and sheep. Get rid of the horses. They round up the horses with these inhumane helicopter roundups. And as soon as the horses are gone, then they turn thousands more cattle and sheep back onto that range. So part of it is the inhumane nature of these roundups. And part of it is the false information that our federal government is putting out there to justify them.
How much pushback is there against these policies?
Well, I think the pushback is really growing, and some incidents that come to light really, I think, sort of propel the conversation forward. Just on Tuesday, a Bureau of Land Management contractor was observed and filmed during a large roundup operation in Nevada, beating and kicking in the head a wild horse that had collapsed from exhaustion after being chased for miles and miles through the desert. The horse was clearly exhausted, wobbly, and finally collapsed. And this BLM contractor got off his horse and began beating and tormenting and kicking this poor horse. That video emerged. News stations picked up the story, and the BLM says that it's sorry. But we know that the Bureau of Land Management doesn't abide by its own animal welfare rules, and these kinds of things happen all day, every day during these roundups.
All right, we're going to take a break, talk more with Scott Beckstead, the interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 at News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248. Lars Larson coming at 1. Umpqua Valley Live at 4. Looking at arts, entertainment, and community events, we're going to talk to Paul McDonald. He's playing at Music on the Half Shell compared to Bob Dylan and Rod Stewart. We'll get a conversation in with him this afternoon at 4 o'clock. Hear some of his music as well. Monday's program, we're going to talk about agriculture at this time of the summer in Douglas County. Logan Bennett and Alicia Christensen from the Oregon State University Extension Service will be with us. And, of course, next week we'll have some interviews out at the Douglas County Fair as well. Animal welfare advocate Scott Beckstead here this afternoon. And we were just talking about the issue of wild burros. I know that you're heading up to Eugene right after this for Senator Merkley's town hall. When it gets into this topic of policy regarding a federal agency, where do the members of Congress, where do they kind of shake out on this?
Well, you have to keep in mind that members of Congress have 1,000 issues that they're trying to deal with. And unfortunately, on this particular issue, on the issue of wild horses and burros that live on Western public lands, Congress tends to simply believe the information that is spoon-fed to them by the BLM. And that is also a major challenge. Getting Congress and getting the news media to start asking the BLM critical questions and very easy questions about the relative impacts of livestock versus federally protected wild horses and burros on our public lands would be a great place to start. They don't have to necessarily do anything, but just challenge the BLM on its own assertions, because there are certain things, very important things, that the BLM does not want Congress or the news media or the American taxpayers to know about how they're managing our wild horses and burros.
Now, I know there's an event on Saturday tied in with this, right?
Right. We have a rally at Bar None Stables in Eugene. I'm anticipating a good group of Oregon advocates are going to be showing up because we are deeply concerned. The BLM is coming for our wild horses in here in Oregon in a couple weeks. The iconic South Steens herd out in the eastern part of the state is being targeted by the agency. They want to round up and remove 760 animals. They say that those horses are overpopulated. And of course, again, it's the same BLM narrative. You know, there are vastly more cattle and sheep on this designated wild horse habitat. And the BLM's data shows that the livestock are damaging that range. But as the BLM does, they're blaming the wild horses, and now they're targeting 760 of them with helicopters.
And again, that event tomorrow, what time is that going on?
That's going to be from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock, Bar None Stables, which is a very popular and well-known boarding stable there in Eugene. And would love to see advocates and taxpayers who are concerned about this show up.
Now, you mentioned your work at Willamette University. That is in Salem, right?
Correct.
And polar law. Now, I can only imagine that my guess about what polar law is not going to be accurate. I'm going to say that it's probably not regarding laws in Alaska and Antarctica.
It's exactly what it's about. It's the governance of the polar regions, both the Arctic up north and Antarctica down south.
Now, see, that seemed like a trick to me somehow.
No,
polar law.
Not.
I was thinking more along the lines of, you know, polar opposites.
No. It's exactly what the name says. And it's the first time this class has ever been taught in a law school. I co-taught the class with a subject matter expert, Dr. Dr. Lita Teneva, who understands the issues. It has a lot to do with international treaties and conventions around Antarctica and the Arctic. So the students learned a lot of international law. They learned about the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea. We covered admiralty and maritime law that pertains to how the polar regions are governed. It was absolutely fascinating and probably one of the best classes I've ever taught in terms of engagement with the students.
How what's the level of population in Antarctica?
Well, it's there's no permanent population there, but it's very interesting because the Antarctic down the South Pole basically is not owned or controlled by anyone. So there are treaties that basically say that Antarctica is only to be used for research, science, and peace. So no military resource extraction activities are permitted there. There's a lot of scientific research, and I would say that most of the people that are there from countries all over the world are basically doing scientific research. A lot of it has to do with climate change and, you know, how the oceans are responding to changing climates and things like that. But I also, we covered a lot of wildlife, maritime wildlife, marine wildlife. I learned for the first time that during the Cold War, when the United States and the Soviet...
Cold War, yes.
Yeah, well, when at the height of the Cold War, when the U.S. and the USSR were at odds over so many things, they were actually working very closely, these two superpowers, to save polar bears up north. And you learn all of these incredible things that countries have done over the years. But it was a fascinating class. And so, the classes that I teach, this upcoming semester, I'm going to be teaching my classes in animal law and animal agriculture law. The following semester, I'll be teaching cannabis law and endangered species law. I also teach classes in Alaska wildlife law and policy. So it's a full schedule, and of course, I do this because I really enjoy teaching these subjects.
And it sounds like you have learned a lot about these Arctic areas.
No, I have. I mean, the law school came to me a few years ago and wanted to. Me to teach a class on Alaska wildlife law because there is a strong relationship between Willamette University and Alaska. A large number of Willamette graduates end up practicing law in Alaska. So owing to that, I became an expert on Alaska wildlife law. Alaska manages its wildlife completely different than any other state. That was interesting. And then I tied a lot of those same concepts into the polar law class.
Wow. You know, one of my friends years ago lived in Wasilla, Alaska for a couple of years.
You know, you can see Russia from there.
Well, and you can, in his case, you could see Sarah Palin. Palin's house driving to work.
That's what I mean.
That's a whole nother thing. But the number one cause of death in that area is moose-involved car accidents.
Well, my first and only trip to Alaska, I stayed in Anchorage with a friend, and at 11:30 at night, it was the middle of summer, so it was 11:30 at night, but it was bright as middle afternoon, so we decided to go for a bike ride, and they have these wonderful bike paths through the middle of Anchorage, and three times I had to swerve around a moose. It's amazing. It's amazing to see these giant bears and moose just sort of walking around town. They're like accepted as regular citizens of the city.
See, I can't imagine, I mean, when I did a lot of bicycling, you would occasionally in rural areas, you'd see a deer head and you'd have to make sure that you're not going to be in the wrong place based on where the deer is going.
Yeah.
A moose, that seems rather daunting.
They're big animals, but another favorite memory, early in the morning, we were driving through downtown and there was a giant brown bear waiting at the traffic light, waiting for the light to turn so he could cross the street. I said, that can't be real. I didn't just see that. And my friend said, actually, yeah, they figured out the traffic devices and they follow the signals. And I'm like, that's insane.
I would think that the brown bear would just have the right-of-way regardless of the signal.
He should. He should have the right-of-way for sure.
Wow. Well, that's we could go a whole nother show just talking about things like this. But again, for the event in Eugene tomorrow, remind folks what time that's going on, where it's at.
Sure. It's at Bar None Stables in Eugene, and it's from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we're going to be there to rally and show our support for our wild horses and burros and try and put a stop to their persecution.
Any website related to this, either nationally or with this event, that people could check out?
You know, the best thing to do is to follow me, because I post all of the pertinent stuff on wild horses on my Facebook page. So find me, Scott Beckstead, on Facebook. I'm also on Instagram and TikTok. I do a regular video series on TikTok called Wild Horse Wednesday, where I give a 3-minute sort of vignette on what's going on. So that's probably the best way, is just follow me, and you'll learn all about these kind of things.
All right, Scott Beckstead, Willamette University law professor and animal welfare advocate. Thanks for coming in.
Always a pleasure, Kyle.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM.